In June of 1938, a Tennessee man threw an unexpected party, a funeral party, for himself. It was the talk of the nation when he did it, and it led to the man becoming a celebrity. When you learn about his life and what motivated him to be at his own funeral, you find a life that challenges you to consider if you have some things to make right while you're still above ground. This is the story of the living funeral of Felix Busch. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring mysteries, myths, and legends of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Funerals bring out the traditions and customs of those who knew and loved the deceased. Here in the South, two things will happen when someone dies, guaranteed. First, when a funeral procession is coming down the road, we pull over. It's a sign of respect, not only for the person who has passed on, but for those who are a part of that procession, who are grieving someone they knew and loved. And the second thing that always happens when someone dies, there's lots of food brought to your home. People you know, and some you don't, they'll drop off enough casseroles, fried chicken, and ham at your home to feed your family and fellow mourners for weeks. There's even what's known as the bosom casserole. It's an enticing dish a widow brings to the home of a new widower in an effort to catch his eye. The food tradition, well, that comes from a place of practicality. Flowers are beautiful, but they fade. People need food, and it can help those who are mourning to have one less thing to worry about during a very trying time. Funeral customs and traditions here in the South and elsewhere, they're based off of one simple thing. Based off of a death. Someone has left this world. So how would you react if you heard there was going to be a funeral in your town, but there was no funeral procession, no casseroles to bake, because no one had died? Instead, a man had decided to throw himself a living funeral. You may think it odd, but living funerals, they're not as rare as you would expect. In researching this episode, I found hundreds of examples from the United States and around the world. But one of the earliest and possibly most legendary accounts was the funeral party thrown by Felix Buschelier Brazil in July of 1938. He was known as Felix Busch, as Uncle Busch to many. Felix Busch's funeral party, it happened in the Cave Creek community in Roane County, Tennessee, and it was the inspiration for an independent film called Get Low. And it's a wonderful movie, but it is, of course, the Hollywood version of Felix's life, which means there's truth, and there's also fiction, and of course, a little something in between. Felix Busch was born on June 29th of 1864. He was one of eight children born to D.W. Brazil and Sarah Littleton Brazil. The Brazil family, they're one of the oldest and most prominent families in Roane County. It's deep in the hills of eastern Tennessee. Felix's family members included many lawyers, a newspaper publisher, and an assistant district attorney. Felix pursued a simpler life, doing what he loved, farming and fox hunting. He never married, and when he was asked why, as single people are always asked, he replied that the one he wanted, he couldn't get, and the ones he could get, he didn't want. As the years passed, Felix became a hermit. He was the source of gossip and rumors around Roane County. Some people were afraid of what they had heard about him, and some people were afraid of him because of how he looked. And he was rough looking. By the time he decided to throw his funeral party, he was in his 70s, and he was a reclusive mountain man who looked the part. He had a long, thick white beard, always wore overalls, dipped snuff, and the man was an almost perfect shot with a rifle. It said he could bring down a fox from 100 yards away. You add it all up, crack shot with a rifle, rumored to be crazy. Well, that led people to fear who Felix could be if they came face to face with him. Mick Brazil runs a website dedicated to the history of his family, including Uncle Bush. He explains that in late 1937, a man asked 73-year-old Felix what he planned to do with a black walnut tree that was growing near his home. Felix explained that he planned to make a coffin out of it. When coffins are brought up in conversations, death and funerals do too. And the man mentioned to Felix that it's a shame that we never know what's going to be said about us at our funeral. They threw around the idea of having your funeral while you're still alive, and after thinking about it for a while, Felix decided he was going to finish building his coffin and then arrange a living funeral party. And when Felix set his mind to something, he made it happen. He was a master craftsman and used his prime black walnut tree to construct his own coffin. Then he approached local funeral home owner Frank Quinn. Felix told Quinn that he wanted to be alive when he heard what people really thought of him. Quinn was skeptical at first and caught off guard. Understandable, considering he'd never had someone request to attend their own funeral. But Frank Quinn agreed, and they set a date, June 26th of 1938, 3 days before Felix's 74th birthday. A friend of Felix Bush named Augustus Summers was the editor of the Roane County Banner, and he was the man who turned this local event into an event that was followed around the world. Summers published a story about the funeral party that would be happening in the months to come, and the story was picked up by the Associated Press, United Press, and Life magazine. And Felix Bush was on his way to becoming a star. So much so that Augustus Summers agreed to become Felix Bush's publicity agent. With the interest in Felix and his funeral party came reporters who wanted to feature Felix. They featured stories months ahead of the funeral party with photos of him and his best friend and his constant companion, a mule named Mule, which he had raised from a young colt. Mule did all the chores a mule would do on a farm in the 1930s, but Felix also claimed he could communicate with Mule and had taught her tricks. When people heard about those tricks, some would get up the courage to approach Felix and ask if he could show them his trick show, and he always obliged. Here's one newspaper's account of Felix and Mule. We asked him to demonstrate, and he turned Mule loose in the barnyard and put her through her stunts. He spoke to her in a low, soft voice. At his command, she laid down, got up, laid down on the other side, walked away, stopped, turned around, went and got a drink, and at a different command, ran in a circle around him. Again, at his low command, she stopped still, and when he said, "Come here," she always walked straight to him. Finally, when he told her to go into her stall, she obeyed at once. Along with the trick show, the folks from the newspapers, they also wanted to know about Felix, his story, and why he was throwing this funeral party. And they also wanted to know why he had separated himself from most people, apart from Miss Melvina Irvin, who was mentioned as a childhood sweetheart who Felix Bush was still courting in his 70s. The biggest question people had was, why had Felix become a hermit? The answer to that question was simple. When Felix was in his 20s, he was accused of murdering a man. And although he escaped being found guilty of the murder, he didn't escape being ostracized by his community and forced into a life of solitude. In 1891, Felix was accused of the murder of James C. Breckinridge Smith, who was known to friends and family as Brack Smith. He was a respected and faithful sheriff in Roane County who left behind a wife and 6 children when he was murdered. 35-year-old Brack Smith's obituary appeared in the Knoxville Daily Journal on August the 8th of 1891. The notice read, "In company with James F. Littleton, he had returned home from a trip to Kingston, and while they were in a stable yard unhitching a horse from a wagon, some unknown party ambushed fired a charge of buckshot into his body from behind. The party was concealed in a cornfield near the barn. He fell forward, and the only words he said were, 'I'm killed,' and he expired immediately. Some 14 buckshot had entered his body under his left shoulder. At present, it is not known who the fiend is, but the citizens of that locality were determined to find out, if possible." In December of 1891, Felix Bush was indicted for the killing and arrested on the streets of his town. The 1 year of his life that was spent away from his home in Roane County was 1892, and that's because Felix spent most of that year in the Roane County Jail because he wasn't able to pay the $5,000 bail. The evidence against Felix was circumstantial, but the prosecution had good reason to be suspicious of his guilt. Court documents revealed he was at the home of a woman named Kate Allen 5 days before the murder and told her that Brack Smith would be dead before the monthly circuit court convened in Kingston 8 days later. Another witness claimed a man named Ephraim Miller told him that Brack Smith would be dead before court at Kingston and implied that someone else would do the killing, but it would happen before that circuit court convened. That testimony led to Ephraim Miller also being arrested and held in jail for the murder of Brack Smith. Sure does make you wonder why that circuit court date was so important to Felix and to Ephraim, and what would have happened had Brack Smith lived and been available for court that day. And you can't help but ask, if you're guilty of planning a murder, why would you mention it to someone? But the evidence kept stacking up against Felix and Ephraim. A third witness, a man named John Hembree, claimed he loaned a loaded double-barreled shotgun to Felix or to Ephraim Miller. But his testimony wasn't clear as to which man he had loaned the gun to. A fourth witness claimed she saw Ephraim Miller going toward Felix's house on the evening of the murder, and he was holding a double-barreled shotgun. A fifth witness claimed that on the evening of the murder, he saw Ephraim Miller take a double-barreled shotgun into Felix's house and that Miller seemed excited and in a hurry. A sixth witness in the court records claimed he saw Ephraim Miller leaving Felix's house on the same evening and that he did not have a shotgun with him when he left Felix's home. So in truth, authorities were able to track the gun to Felix's home. The suspicious behavior that night would make anyone think it was possible Felix had been involved in the murder. But there was one big unknown question around Brack Smith's murder. A local newspaper printed a story soon after Smith was murdered and noted that he had had some trouble with neighbors and had shot one of them. The article mentioned that there was an assumption that the death had been the result of that trouble, but the neighbor wasn't named. And it leaves you wondering, who was this neighbor? Why had they argued? And why had shots been fired? Was this neighbor called in to be questioned for the murder? If so, it's not listed in court documents. Later in 1892, Felix Busch was tried and then acquitted of the murder of Brack Smith. The jury only had circumstantial evidence and found that there wasn't enough physical evidence to link Felix to the murder. But you know, if you're accused of murder, put on trial, and even acquitted, your life will never be the same. People never see you the same way. That's why people pushed Felix away and why he ended up living as a hermit. And that's why many people believe Felix wanted his funeral party, wanted to make sure people got it right, and in the end that the true story was told. In the days before Felix Busch's funeral party in June of 1938, the preacher who had been asked to deliver the sermon at the event visited with Felix at his home. The Reverend Charles Jackson was concerned about the party aspect of the event and wanted to make sure that Felix had honorable intentions. When he and Felix talked over plans for the funeral, Reverend Jackson said he was impressed with the intent and purpose behind such an unusual event. Felix had told Jackson that he was almost 74 years old and he felt like he was living on borrowed time and wanted to make sure he died with no lingering questions about his life. Sunday, June 26th of 1938 was funeral party day in East Tennessee. And it was a hot one. It was hotter than you'd expect for a summer day in the mountains of East Tennessee. But the heat, it didn't keep people away from one of the biggest events in Roane County, Tennessee history, Felix Busch's funeral. In the days before the funeral, people had been arriving in the area, camping out in the woods around the Cave Creek Missionary Baptist Church, where the big event was to happen. Frank Quinn, who was planning the event, realized that the attendance was going to be bigger than he had expected, so he made plans to move the funeral outside to the cemetery grounds and set up a tent for the main event. On the day of the funeral party, an estimated crowd of between 8 to 10,000 people attended Felix Busch's funeral. They came by car, truck, horseback, wagon, some walked, and some were even there before daybreak to ensure that they got the best view. People came from all over the place, One man who attended the funeral party said he counted cars from 14 states, including Virginia, Kentucky, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Washington, Arkansas, Illinois, New York, Louisiana, Missouri, and more. A few folks made money charging people 25 cents a car to park on their property, and one man even set up a hot dog and Coke stand to make money off all the tourists in town. There were so many people in the area for the event, so many cars on the narrow dirt roads, that Felix Busch was late to his own funeral. There had been rumors going around that Felix's beloved mule would be leading the funeral procession, pulling a wagon bearing his coffin, but that, well, it wasn't true. Felix rode to his funeral party in Undertaker Frank Quinn's funeral coach. His handmade coffin was in the back of the coach, but Felix and Frank, well, they were almost 40 minutes late because of all the traffic on the dirt roads around the community and the crowds. Bonnie Robinson, a reporter for the Knoxville News Sentinel, attended the funeral party and said that at one point, as the funeral coach was delayed on the road, Felix leaned his head out of the front seat and said to the crowd that it looks like I ain't going to get to my own burying. Frank Quinn decided he would clear the path for the vehicle, so he got out of the coach and got the state highway patrol officers in the area to help clear the road for the funeral procession. When the procession finally arrived at the church, crowds were jammed so close together that Felix and the pallbearers carrying his casket, they struggled to get from the funeral coach to the funeral tent. A man had to use the loudspeaker in the tent to plead with the crowd to stop shoving and to give them room. Finally, Felix made it through the crowd and gathered under the funeral tent that was set up under a giant cottonwood tree. The casket was set in place, and Felix, who was dressed up in a new suit donated by a Knoxville clothing store, well, Felix sat directly in front of his own handmade coffin. People made a wall around him to protect him from the crowd, but Felix didn't seem to mind. He looked pleased and peaceful, despite the chaos of the crowd around him that day. Felix was joined on the funeral stage by Undertaker Frank Quinn, Reverend Charles Jackson, the Friendly Eight Octet, a singing group that had been requested to come in from Chattanooga to sing during the funeral, along with singers from the area, the Kingston Quartet. The singers had also been held up by the crowds, but once they were under the tent, the event started with a song requested by Felix. Hold on to God's unchanging hand. Reverend Jackson began to speak and struggled to keep his voice loud enough for the large crowd. We know what he said that day because the Roane County Banner printed the full sermon for those who wanted a memento of what they had witnessed and those who were unable to attend. The Reverend acknowledged that this was an unusual event, but commented on the appropriateness, saying, "It is interesting to find an individual who takes time from the ordinary procedure of life in this day of feverish and restless activity to the thought of tomorrow and anticipate the great adventure called death." He continued by telling the crowd that the funeral party, it wasn't a bad idea, saying, "If a lot of those rednecks out there had to face the music before they passed out, it would improve their way of living. This is a funeral occasion that is divested of heartbreaks and heartaches. It might be wholesome for everyone to hear his own funeral before he crosses over. There might be time to make amends before the end." As the Reverend spoke, Felix calmly listened. The funny thing is, not much was said about Felix Busch during his funeral party. The Reverend read a short obituary about Felix, but otherwise, the sermon was about reflection and building, saying the measure of the man is the thing which he builds with his own life. The Reverend finished the sermon. The Friendly Eight Octet sang the hymns Felix had requested, including Crossing the Bar and On Jordan's Stormy Banks I Stand. The actual funeral, it was a serious affair, but the celebration was said to go on for hours in the summer heat of East Tennessee, and it took its toll on some people. One man in the crowd had a stroke. 10 people fainted from the heat. Those who braved the heat and waited in line, they got to meet Felix and get his autograph. He was illiterate, so he signed those autographs with a simple X. And Felix met with the press who had come to the event and said that he was pleased with the doings and the goings-on of the day, and he liked what the Reverend had to say. After the funeral, Felix was famous. Radio stations, newspapers, and magazines wanted more interviews with him. Fans continued to send him fan mail, including a young girl from Germany who wrote to Felix to tell him that she hoped he enjoyed his funeral. He was also invited to appear on Ripley's Believe It or Not radio program in July of 1938. This invitation was the equivalent of being asked to appear on morning shows like The Today Show or Good Morning America. Here's a bit of Robert Ripley's interview with Felix on Ripley's Believe It or Not on July 26th of 1938.
Tell me, how many people were at your funeral?
Well, made it about 8,000.
Say, I also understand that you're a half hour late to your own funeral.
Yes, I painted the road to people, wanted me to sign autographs. Half hour late, getting to the top of the hill.
Just what did you like best about your own funeral?
Well, sir, the best I liked about it, they didn't bury me after the funeral was over.
It's such a treasure to hear Felix's voice and his sharp wit coming through, too. Felix made it known to reporters and to friends that his funeral party was his last funeral. He didn't want another one when he died. And he died peacefully at his home in his sleep on February the 9th of 1943. His body lay in state for an hour at the cemetery before interment. People came to pay their final respects for this man who had been a hermit, ostracized by his community, and in his final years became a celebrity just because he threw himself a funeral. When it came time for his burial, a few people gathered around his grave as he was laid to rest in the walnut coffin he had made years before. Back at his funeral party in 1938, Felix had requested a special hymn be sung by the Friendly Aid Octet. It's called Where We'll Never Grow Old. The lyrics to the old hymn, it may help us all understand why Felix requested that funeral party. The hymn speaks to our work here being done, our troubles, our trials being over, our sorrows ending, and our voices blending in unison. Felix took a courageous step. He moved from a place of loneliness and exclusion to a place of blending voices in unison in his community, helping people move from a fear of the old hermit in town, even challenging them to assess their own life and to make things right before it's too late. When he passed, the people of his town felt like they had lost a friend. And as the old saying goes, a life that touches others, well, that life, it goes on forever.
Never grow old, never grow old. 'Tis a land where we'll never grow old. Oh, never grow old, never grow old. 'Tis a land where we'll never grow
old. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can see photos of Felix and his funeral party when you join the Southern Mysteries discussion group. Just search for Southern Mysteries on Facebook to join. I'd love to connect with you there. And if you enjoy Southern Mysteries, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review on iTunes to help others discover these stories that you've enjoyed listening to. Music featured in this episode includes Hold to God's Unchanging Hands, performed by Hosea Hudson. Where We'll Never Grow Old, performed by The Lower Lights. You can hear more from these talented artists at thelowerlights.com. And Southern Mysteries' theme song is Dark and Troubled by Pantherburn. Before I go, I wanted to let you know that I'm currently in the process of rewriting and re-releasing Season 1 of Southern Mysteries. If you're new to Southern Mysteries and you haven't listened to Season 1, I used to have a co-host. The first season was co-hosted with my friend Tracy, and she had to step away from the show because of work schedules and other obligations that just got a little too crazy for her. And when she moved on, I moved on too. The storytelling style, it evolved into something that's more natural for me. And I've spoken with Tracy, and with her blessing, I will be updating season one so that it's consistent with the episodes that you've heard in season two. It's a time-consuming project, but it's worth it because new listeners, they're discovering the show every day, and I want to make sure things are consistent for everyone who comes along and listens to what the podcast is today and wants to dive into the archives. And if you've listened from day one, thank you so much for being an early believer in Southern Mysteries, and thank you for sticking around when the show transitioned into what it is now. We have listeners from over 20 countries now, and that's the lovely part of this podcast world. Your little corner of the world, it doesn't seem so little when you get to share and connect through the magic of storytelling and people who have open minds and just want to learn about something new. And with that in mind, this will be the final episode of season two so that I can dive in over the next month and work on re-recording and re-releasing season one and prepare for season three. And to answer the question, August the 27th, that's when season three will start and you'll have a new episode of Southern Mysteries.